Blog Talk Radio.
Open mouth, say shit. The off-season version of In Much Less Detail, the podcast, on a Monday night, March the 23rd, 2015. I'm Dre, he's Jay. We have just seen the go-home version of Monday Night Raw. The WrestleMania 31 promotion is in the books, and now the big show is waiting for Sunday evening and what promises to be one of the stranger main events of WrestleMania that we've seen, with the clearly babyface Brock Lesnar against the half-and-half babyface heel Roman Reigns, but they're pushing him as a babyface, but I can't really tell because it's hard to tell, and they don't have him speak much because they don't have any confidence in him, and it's a go-home Raw, and here comes the big babyface with a big push at the end of the show, and they let him say zero words. Jason, I'm not quite sure what to make of all that.
Yeah, excuse me. Yeah, I'm not really sure what I just saw either. I can say one thing for sure, and you know I'm not a big wrestling fan. I did subject myself to Raw tonight in preparation for the show. And I can honestly say, and I'm sure this is going to be a very common joke, if it's not already, is that everybody who watches WrestleMania is certainly going to get their $9.99's worth.
if that.
Yeah, because, you know, let's not just have our announcers tout the fact that this is not a $65 event. This is a $10 event, and there's no commitment. Really, you can just watch and then cancel, because you're probably going to want to after this WrestleMania. It even felt like the announcers didn't have confidence in the product tonight. Very underwhelming, I think, is the overall. Last year, there was some excitement. I'm not sure if there was a lot of excitement that translated to me, but as somebody watching, I could feel that, hey, if I knew somebody who was a wrestling fan, such as, say, yourself or friends I have who were wrestling fans, that there was something to get excited about. I didn't feel that at all this year. That didn't feel like the Raw right before WrestleMania. It just felt like I sat down and decided to torture myself for 3 hours on my couch here in the basement.
You don't get to see Snoop Dogg every night.
The best example I can think of for that is, this is going to probably be very unmemorable. This is going to be unmemorable to the way like UFC is unmemorable. Because everybody remembers UFC 27, right?
Brazilian guy against the Russian guy.
Yeah, this is going to be instantly consumable in one ear and out the other, and you'll forget about it probably 20 minutes after you saw it. I don't think there's really I don't get the impression that there's a whole lot that's going to be lasting. I mean, not that there ever is anyways from WrestleMania, because, you know, whoever wins loses the next night anyways. But this, yeah, not very exciting. So the question I have is, what's the venue for this? Where are they having this at the same place?
That's funny. I noticed that they said, all right, we're getting ready for WrestleMania in 6 nights right here in Los Angeles. And I said, no, it's not in Los Angeles. It's in the new 49ers stadium, Levi Stadium, which is, where is that, in San Jose, I believe?
Okay, so it's in a big
Santa Clara.
I was a little worried that they were having it at the Staples Center, and then I'm thinking, wow, they've gone from pulling in 85,000-90,000 for WrestleMania to 18. So
yeah, that was a little strange the way they phrased that. They were just trying to keep the crowd excited, being there in California, but no, yeah, it's actually not in Los Angeles at all. They're trying to keep the casual fan interested like you.
Well, that's straining it. that's definitely a stretch to call me a casual fan. I would call myself a casual observer.
Okay, fair enough.
I can definitely see what's happening and make sense of what's happening and have an opinion on what's happening, but I could care less what's happening.
Well, this is why we have the special guest for our WrestleMania podcast, because we have your observation, the casual observer, the casual fan, however you want to phrase that, and we see that you're underwhelmed at your initial thoughts about tonight. We'll get my thoughts all throughout this hour-long podcast of WrestleMania, but now we bring in a more than casual fan, definitely a long-time, lifelong observer of wrestling, of the wrestling scene, enjoys the wrestling podcast even like I do, so he's really deep involved in this thing. Can't get rid of the bug. It's in our blood. We love our wrestling no matter how bad it can be sometimes. So to get his opinion on things that happened tonight in the WrestleMania buildup, we welcome in now Jerry, our wrestling expert friend from up there in your neck of the woods in central Wisconsin. Jerry, how you doing tonight?
I'm great. How are you two doing?
Doing well.
That's awesome. So your initial observations of that somewhat strange ending to the go-home version of Raw.
Well, even the grabbing of the title was, like, awkward. It was just very, very awkward. I think everyone wanted to see a tussle. I'm sure as soon as the camera went off, the crowd got one. But give us something. And, you know, the whole idea that they're staring at each other and they're trying to grab the title, I'm like, I don't know. It did seem, and there was really no words from Roman Reigns. I think the fans that do like him wanted to hear him say something, and yeah, it did kind of fizzle at the end there.
Yeah, I don't quite get the purpose of that. The promo that had Roman Reigns cut on last week's Raw, where he confronted Paul Heyman in the middle of the ring and sort of brushed him aside and said, I'm going to speak right to Brock Lesnar and I'm going to talk to you next week and tell you that I really can, you know, do this. And I really can. I really do believe that might have been his strongest promo of this entire WrestleMania buildup. And it's still, and that was nothing. That was, you know, completely something you could blow off and not remember. And that's maybe his best promo of this whole thing. Is it me, or does he just seem woefully inept and underprepared for this entire push that he's getting?
Yeah, I guess he did have that hernia surgery, and I thought he'd be, you know, you'd think he'd be spending that time working on those things. Maybe he was, just not prepared enough. I mean, the week after the Royal Rumble, the Monday Night Raw, that got canceled. The actual event was canceled due to the weather. I'm sure you saw the interview they did with Roman Reigns. There was some awkwardness where it seemed like the sound went out. And I'm actually wondering if you had said lines even, the way it was his delivery and everything. And that was only a couple months ago. And, it just seems like they are trying to really control what comes out of his mouth and trying to keep him from, saying something I'd rather have him say something, make a mistake, than what they're doing now. Because the smarter fans these days, they're just not buying it.
They didn't even give you much, Jason, to really go on. You, as someone who I know for a fact has not watched an episode of Monday Night Raw since last year at this time.
That's correct.
That you should be able to slip into the go-home version of Raw and see the lead babyface, the number one guy in the promotion, ostensibly. You should be able to get a sense of what makes him special. You should be able to get a feeling of, oh, okay, I see what they're doing. I see who he is and why people should rally around him. They didn't give you much to go on. They gave him zero words and a little stare down. I don't know if that was enough for you to make anything out of him, just looking at that.
No, to me, felt like a lost opportunity for them, because the one thing, again, not having watched a single episode of Raw in a year and not having witnessed any wrestling since last year's WrestleMania, the one thing that was intriguing to me right from the beginning was the fact that the main event wasn't the same guys. It wasn't Orton and Cena or Triple H. It was something new, somewhat new. I mean, I saw Lesnar last year with the match with The Undertaker, so you could tell that that was sort of them building him up, so it makes sense that he's the champion now. So from that angle, yeah, okay, I just jumped right in. And now here's his challenger, who could be anybody. I mean, they could have had a cardboard cutout of somebody up on the stage with him, and that could have been, it could have been Snoop Dogg. For, you know, Snoop Dogg had more to do tonight than Roman Reigns, who I'm extremely unfamiliar with and even more underwhelmed by. I'd be blown away if he won this match. Absolutely blown away if he won this match.
They sure don't seem like he's supposed to have any real shot when you look at the sort of unusual push that he's gotten leading up to this. They had some opportunities to make him look strong, Jay, and they've really dropped the ball even then. You know, you'd say they seem like they had a lost opportunity and dropped the ball tonight. Believe me, it hasn't been much better before this. You haven't missed, like, as usual, you haven't missed much.
And just knowing what I know through the years, I got the feeling like he's getting the push because the guy who was supposed to be getting the push was, like, hurt. And so he really feels like a plan B to me, not knowing anything. I could be absolutely wrong, and this is plan A, and this is the guy who they're trying to give the big push to for WrestleMania, their biggest event. But this guy did not feel like, this doesn't feel like the way it was drawn up.
It was the same as always, right, Jerry, that the biggest pop of the night pretty much goes to the hurt guy, Daniel Bryan, the guy that they clearly don't want to push, but the guy that everyone clearly wants to get behind.
Yeah, I mean, the last pay-per-view, that newer one, or at least it's been renamed, Fastlane, and with Daniel Bryan and Roman Reigns, the winner gets Brock Lesnar. I mean, I was really hoping, I mean, I was intrigued to see it, and I was really hoping for a David versus Goliath, you know, because Daniel Bryan is not a real big guy. To have those two go at it at WrestleMania would have been amazing to see that go down. Two different styles and the size difference. And, you know, when I saw a clean win by Roman Reigns, I'm like, wow, they're really going to go with this one. They're really going to go through with this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Vince McMahon clearly is in for a dime, in for a dollar. He has his mind and his promotional packaging and everything behind Roman Reigns, and there's nothing that's going to throw him off course. And another piece of proof of that is I have a television at work. There's a common TV there, and one Saturday morning that I came in after the Royal Rumble ended, everyone talked about the reaction from the Philadelphia crowd when Roman Reigns won and how unbelievably negative it was, and they basically crapped all over the decision to have him go over, even though I think everyone pretty much knew he was going to go over. And the reason that I knew that it was all about Roman Reigns this year for WrestleMania is because I come in the Saturday morning, 6 days after the Royal Rumble, and we have our local NBC affiliate up on our TV in the break room, and right in the middle of Saturday morning cartoons at 8 in the morning is a cute little commercial featuring a muscle-bound father leaning over a kiddie's book and helping his adorable daughter learn how to read, and lo and behold, it's Roman Reigns, and my mouth dropped. Like, they are all in on Roman Reigns. They've got everything figured out with him. He's going to be the strong, muscle-bound Superman guy with the Superman punch, but with the soft side, the loving, caring father and doting on his daughter. They got all the angles covered. They are in on this guy. That's why I knew he wasn't going to lose to Daniel Bryan at Fastlane, because the promotion had already started behind him. This is all about Roman Reigns. You said you'd be shocked, Jason, if he wins at WrestleMania. He's going to win at WrestleMania because it's all about Roman Reigns. I don't think there's any doubt about that, and it's going to be very interesting to see that reaction, because I don't think it's going to be very popular.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'd be totally. You see it happening, I'd be stunned just from looking at it from like from their business standpoint. You know, hate to be that cynical, but that doesn't seem like it's putting booties in the seats. That this guy's your champ. I don't see anybody running out buying this guy's T-shirt or doing any of those things. I mean, maybe the best thing that could happen would be that they beat the living shit out of each other. And maybe Roman Reigns wins, and he's just laying there in a heap, and then the Money in the Bank guy just runs out and challenges him right on the spot and makes him lose his title that night.
That's hilarious. You haven't watched this shit in a year, and you already got the angle figured out that they might be going
but
with.
But I would say that one might be. Well, I saw the guy walking around with the briefcase tonight, and he got a bigger pop than Roman Reigns did. So yeah. Maybe. You know, maybe there's a little chicanery going on here. But that's the way I'd write it.
you might be right on the money with that.
Yeah, I'm a conspiracy theorist that I know there's a lot of stuff going on where Brock Lesnar behind the scenes supposedly walked out of a Monday Night Raw a few weeks ago. And they still haven't hammered out his contract. I mean, this is what you're reading on the internet. Take it for what you will, but I actually think I foresee a swerve where I think Brock Lesnar is going to win, and I think I guess that's one of my theories is Brock's going to win, and maybe there's an opportunity where if Rollins comes out, cashes in, that would really put him on top to say, you know, even though Brock would be in rough shape, Rollins comes out, cashes in. I mean, and the crowd really likes Brock Lesnar. That could really give him some good heat. Rollins already has some heat, but this would really, really get it. I could also see, I guess there could be an opportunity to, if you remember what happened to The Rock, when they were really trying to, and this reminds me, when they were trying to force The Rock down our throats, or Rocky Maivia. And yep. When you got your big baby face and everybody's chanting, "Die, Rocky, die." I mean, in the end, they turned him. And another thing, they did this years ago, but so many new fans, it's new to them, is they could turn Paul Heyman on Brock Lesnar. So Roman Reigns wins, but they do a switch, even though I don't know, I can't tell if Roman Reigns is a heel or not, but officially turn him heel. So now they're booing, and they're supposed to be booing him. And nothing better than having Paul Heyman turn on Brock Lesnar. That's not the first time that's happened.
No, it's not. I really feel that's going to be my official shocker prediction for this WrestleMania, because last year, I have to build off of last year being the one lone voice out there that said that I think Brock Lesnar was going to beat The Undertaker because of how crazy that buildup was. My official, you already stole it, Jerry, my official shocker prediction for this WrestleMania was that Roman Reigns wins with help from Paul Heyman to turn Roman Reigns heel, and I'll even take it a step further to set up next year's WrestleMania 32 in Dallas, Texas, where there would be the potential for the biggest audience of all time, over 100,000 potentially down there. I think Vince McMahon wants to have that be as big as possible, and what would be bigger than the biggest Hollywood star in the history of WWE coming back to salvage the WWE and stand up for what's right against his now evil cousin. So I'm calling Roman Reigns as a heel with Paul Heyman in his corner versus The Rock for the big title next year at WrestleMania 32.
Yeah, I think that's, because I've been reading lately with there's talk about The Rock wanting to, they all start by getting a whisper out there, getting the buzz out there. And I think, that's got a chance. I actually think being in Texas, I really think there's a chance of Stone Cold Steve Austin having one more shot.
Yeah, if he can get himself in shape for it, that would be huge as well. I could see both of them appearing on the show. Like I said, I think Vince wants this to be as big as possible, so I think he will pull out all the stops if it takes bringing back Austin, Rock, anyone who's got any name value left at all. I think he would do it.
Oh yeah, if it wasn't for cremating Andre the Giant, he would have done something to get back. He would have wheeled that guy. He would have wheeled his carcass into the ring to get asses in the seats.
So it definitely says something that it sounds. I mean, I'm getting more excitement from you for next year's WrestleMania.
Yeah, I'm a conspiracy
theory. Than I am
for
this year's WrestleMania. You know, I mean, is this a write-off? I mean, do you think they know that this is a bad card?
I do. I do feel like it's a bit of a write-off or overlooking this show to try to build Roman Reigns as big as they can, as quick as possible, to get ready for WrestleMania 32. Because, Jerry, in all the years before booking this mega babyface, there's some steps that they skipped seriously with building Roman Reigns. I mean, he was, at this time last year, he was in the tag team champs with Seth Rollins in the Shield. And between now and then, there's a lot of things that they should have done with Roman Reigns that they didn't do, trying to shove him up the ladder as high as possible. He hasn't had any singles adversity. He hasn't had any real major feuds outside of just when he broke off from the Shield and sort of feuded with Seth Rollins a little bit. He's had zero singles championships to sort of build, you know, build up how to be a champion, how to be a babyface that's being hunted instead of the hunter. There's so many things that they had a chance to do with him that they haven't done. And you mentioned his illness, or his injury rather, that kept him out of action for all the way up until the Royal Rumble. He missed about 2 or 3 months of action. But still, to bring him back and immediately put him in that spot to win the Royal Rumble and shoot him back up the ladder, I think really that's what a lot of fans are rebelling against, that he's so obviously the chosen one. There's so many steps that they've skipped that it's just too obvious. It just doesn't smell right.
Yeah, you know, and his repertoire of moves, it can get. I don't think he has more than 3, and not that he needs to put on a clinic, but he overuses them too, I feel. And he was the exciting, quiet big man in the Shield, and he just never seemed like they had the chance to build his person. Maybe they should have turned him, you know, the injury probably threw everything for a loop, but they should have maybe tried to turn him heel sooner. And then flip them, because sometimes it's easier if the crowd's going against you, turn them heel, and then eventually the crowd gets, you know, eventually the crowd buys in, then you can flip them. But I think the injury took some options away from them.
Well, I don't think the crowd was really against him until the whole Royal Rumble, when he was shot right up back to the top after his injury. I think the crowd was fine behind him before that, sort of going along with the ride and watching him build up. It's just the fact that he got hurt, should have fell back down the ladder, like I said, back in the old days. You don't come right back. You know, Magnum TA wouldn't have had a 3-month injury, come back and immediately step back challenging for the world title. There would have been some form of building him back up, because you don't just come back. Because what does that say about everybody else? If he can come back and step right in and win the Royal Rumble off a major appendectomy, then what does that say about all your other guys? Is he really that great? And with those 3 moves, like you said, how is he able to do that, basically spearing guys and throwing a Superman punch and occasional powerbomb, and that's like all he does? That's, to me, that puts a bad light on all your other wrestlers, making all of them look completely like jabronis, and I really think that's what the crowds are rebelling against.
Yeah, it would have been interesting to see I do think that Royal Rumble entry is a late entry into the Rumble, and it almost reminds me of Dave Bautista last year, where he came in, boom, and ultimately he's in the main event. But it'd be interesting to see if had he not been injured, if this would have still happened or not. The Philadelphia crowd, that's like you just never know what to expect. They usually go with the heels. I smelled trouble coming in when they're going to Philadelphia. They just kind of go against the grain.
Right, and they're very passionate about going against the grain too. However way they're going to go, they're going to go hard. There's no halfway with that crowd. So it's almost like WWE was kind of asking for it, doing what they did, getting Daniel Bryan eliminated so early and shooting Roman Reigns right up the top. They brought in The Rock, anticipating needing something huge to try to put Roman Reigns over at the end, and it still didn't work. They booed The Rock, too. They like, we don't care about you either. So they kind of knew what was coming, but in a way they sort of asked for it.
Yeah, the Rock could not polish that turd. And
yeah.
The other thing was, if you recall the end of the match, Rusev was under the ring. He wasn't just laying on the ground. He was under the ring. You know he's under the ring because the ref actually pulled the ring apron up and he said something to him along the lines of, get your ass in the ring. I think the plan was Roman Reigns wins, the crowd goes crazy, and there's that split second where Rusev was going to sneak in and scare the crowd like, oh my God, Rusev's going to win. And then kind of have a false finish, finish it again, get another big pop out of the crowd. But when the crowd turned, and then the crowd started chanting Rusev.
Yeah.
I watched a few times where the ref pulled up the apron and basically said, get your ass in the ring. And they did, instead of making it a threat, they blew him right out of the ring quick and seemed like they just said, just end the damn thing. Just end the damn thing.
Yeah, Jason, you would have loved the Royal Rumble where Roman Reigns won the right to face Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania. They presented Roman Reigns as, you know, the conquering hero and the guy that's going to go in and clean up all the trash in the ring and be the strong guy and everyone should love him. And it was in Philadelphia, which is a notoriously, boy, how to describe the Philly fans. You're a big NFL fan like I am. You can pretty much guess what Philadelphia fans are like just based off of how they treat the Eagles up there and what they do when Michael Irvin almost got paralyzed in the stadium and they had a standing ovation? It was, yeah!
They're throwing batteries at the other team's players. They booed Santa Claus off the field. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's a rough place to try to put – they should have done something like that in Omaha.
Well, you know, when Bubba Ray Dudley comes out to a pop that only Hulk Hogan can get, you knew that. I mean, because being the old ECW and he was in, I'll be honest, Bubba Ray Dudley was in the greatest shape I've ever seen him. You know, following him in TNA wrestling when he was Bully Ray, and he's still in great shape. But to see him when his music hit in the crowd, I mean, if that would have been anywhere else, the kids in the crowd would be like, "Who the hell is this?
Who's that?"
But in Philadelphia though, it was. I mean. Yeah, you knew what you're in for the night when he came out to the pop he got.
Yeah, it was crazy, and you knew Roman Reigns was pretty much doomed, and it went about as bad as you could go. But like I said, you come right back the next week with ads for Roman Reigns on kiddie television, and that makes it pretty clear what they had in mind the whole time, that this was their man, and nothing was going to stop that. Now, for a while, I thought the outcome of Lesnar Reigns at WrestleMania was going to be solely dependent on Brock Lesnar's contract status, because it makes so much sense for Lesnar to go over Reigns clean because of how little experience Reigns has, because of how little he's proven himself in every chance they've given him in the ring and on the mic, in my opinion. He hasn't really measured up either way. And because of the general reaction to Roman Reigns leading up to this, it's to me, Lesnar clean is the right way to go. It's not how they're going to go, in my opinion. But I was thinking for a while that it was going to be up to whether Lesnar is officially signed or not. And you were talking about reading some of these dirt sheets and rumor mills and whatnot online about Lesnar's contract status. And I thought if he was signed, then he would be the guy to keep the title and go over. And if he wasn't signed, then WWE wasn't going to take the chance and they were going to have Roman Reigns go over. And now I'm not sure at all that their push of Reigns is so obstinate in the face of all the reaction that he's getting that now I think Reigns is going over no matter what the contract status. So I kind of don't even care about the contract status anymore, because I think WWE has a way they want to go. And that's the way they're just going to do no matter what.
Yeah, it appears that way.
It's sort of almost the opposite of what I watched last year with Daniel Bryan, where he almost had to win.
Yes, because he was actually popular, because people actually wanted to see the ending of this story of him climbing the ladder and breaking all the rules and defying all the odds and being the guy standing at the end of WrestleMania. That's not happening right now.
And that right there is where I think you know, you kind of hit the nail on the head of where it feels different, because last year there was a story. That whole show was about the story and the adversity and, you know, and the corporations holding him down and highlights of him actually wrestling, because he's a good wrestler. He actually has moves. He doesn't have just four moves.
Hello?
Did we lose Jason?
I think we lost Jason.
Yeah, he just dropped. That's strange. The Skype usually doesn't drop. The phone calls drop sometimes because it's the cell phone, but the Skype usually doesn't drop. But hopefully he'll be able to get back in with us. I did want to ask you, Jerry, and then I can get off of the Reigns-Lesnar thing after this question, but I'm looking at the 10 years of John Cena as the number one guy, the polarizing baby face, the crowd, half the crowd hates him, the other half loves him, but either way he gets a very strong reaction no matter what. Do you think they're going to go with Reigns and kind of go half-assed and not turn him? I know you talked about the conspiracy theory of maybe Paul Heyman teaming up with him and they go full heel, and I think that's what's going to happen too, but do you think maybe they're going to keep him kind of this half baby face, half heel, that they want another decade of polarizing baby face because they think that's just the way to go now, to just get a strong reaction, even if half the reaction is we really hate this guy?
You know, I see it almost what they did with CM Punk, where he's the champion and what they called him the longest champion of the modern era. But he really wasn't. I mean, he was the champion. He had the belt. But John Cena was still the poster child. And that's where I don't see, you know, they're trying to go all in on Roman Reigns, but, you know, if he's not getting, you know, if merchandise sales aren't there and the crowd's not there, you know, they can have him go to all these make-a-wishes and things, but, you know, plus there's that commitment. I mean, John Cena is a machine. As his wrestling gimmick and everything, I'm not so into, but, like, as a man, as a person, holy cow, what that guy does day in and day out.
Yeah.
No, I just don't see it going with, you know, with Roman Reigns. I mean, he's not even getting the mixed. People are, you know, they're trying to compare the mixed reaction. I mean, John Cena's mixed reaction is very polarizing. It's very loud both ways. With Reigns, it's like you're hearing the few kids cheer, and then you're hearing like he's definitely getting much more boos than he is cheers.
Yeah, and the reaction, the hate and the love, you're right, is not as nuclear with Roman Reigns as it is with John Cena, because the hate is like electric boos and virulent, and John Cena sucks, and then everyone's singing and screaming at him, and the screams and the cheers from the girls and the little kids, it's still pretty hot, even after all this time, and it's not that hot either way with Roman Reigns, so they might not go that way, but I'm kind of curious. I don't know if they want to go with that again. I think they might be a little greedy and say, well, we got 10 years of that type of reaction with Cena. Let's see if we can get 5 or 10 years of that with Roman Reigns, and we'll see how long that'll go. But
if they really want the long-term success of Roman Reigns, they should turn him heel. And right at WrestleMania, the crowd already hates him. Go with it. And eventually, you know, if he improves and, you know, eventually the heels become cool, and then he could become the next big thing. But I think they have to turn heel if they want to have him succeed long term.
Yeah, that might be the way to go. So, Jason, joining us once again, what else stood out on this go home episode of Raw outside of Snoop Dogg and Bill Simmons and all the attempts to go mainstream?
once again, I've kind of been left with the impression I'm not so sure how good of a wrestler this guy actually is, but I once again came away with the impression that Bray Wyatt is the only guy out there who really handles the microphone very well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he did a great job. I mean, actually, he gives a speech. Even with the crowd interjecting during the speech, I believe I heard some whats during the speech. Did a good job on the mic, which is what you kind of want from a bad guy. He's definitely embracing the bad guy role, which he was doing as well last year, because wasn't he the one who wrestled Cena last year? He was going to break the will of John Cena and force him to do things and evil things. And so I kind of like the direction. I've got the feeling he's going to lose to The Undertaker. I don't think they're going to have The Undertaker lose two in a row.
Right.
But I still like the direction and sort of the arc that's going on with that character. It remains to be, I don't know how good of a wrestler this guy is, though, but he's good on the mic. He's definitely somebody you want to have out there and do a spot, sort of the anti-Roman Reigns.
Jerry, this is a very popular topic on these wrestling podcasts that we both listen to about the mic work of the typical talent today, which seems to be very sorely lacking from what we grew up with in the 80s and 90s. And Bray Wyatt is a perfect example to me of not only should you allow these younger guys to sort of go a little off script in order to build up their mic work, that's the only way they're going to get better as far as I'm concerned. Not only should they be allowed to do that, but we're seeing that with Bray Wyatt, because when he first started out with all the sort of gobbledygook that he talks, it wasn't as tight as it is now. He's getting better. It was a little looser, and they let him go on. I'm sure they give him his bullet points and whatnot, but I think for the most part, that's him. Those are his words. I don't think there's too much writing going on for him, and there's nobody else in WWE that it seems like gets a chance to write their own words or say what's in their own voice. This guy seems to be the only one that has engendered that kind of confidence, but if you don't let everyone else sort of do that, you're not going to find out who's good at it or not. So I think you're seeing the embodiment of let them do their own thing on the microphone, let them sort of make some mistakes here and there, and let's see who's actually got the chops to do this, because like Jason said, clearly this guy's got the chops.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I remember seeing him as Husky Harris, and then when they sent him back to NXT to see him, I mean, to me this is a credit to NXT, how helping him find this character and develop it, and I mean, it is an eerie, not his persona as much as him, his mic work is that of almost Jake the Snake Roberts in his heyday. But yeah, NXT was, I think, sending him back to NXT and having him develop that character, he really reminds me of, I definitely think he's kind of channeling in, what's the bad guy in Cape Fear?
Oh, yeah, Robert De Niro's character.
Yeah, I mean, really just, and, you know, and he's kind of, I wouldn't say wrestling royalty, but his dad is Mike Rotundo, who's went kind of more well-known as IRS,
yep.
Or Arn Shyster. I believe he's even related to one of the horsemen, Barry Windham. I think he's a Windham, too. So, I mean, there's talent there. But, yeah, and his mic work, it is unbelievable. And tonight was great. And he's basically, you know, Undertaker hasn't even made an appearance yet. He's not going to till WrestleMania. They got him down to where now he just shows up at WrestleMania. So, I mean, there are things he said during tonight that, like, we're not going to put you out on, we're not going to take you out of the ring on your shield. The whole idea of standing over, you know, I hate to say it, but, you know, Brock didn't need, I was shocked last year when you called it. I did not see him beating Undertaker, but Bray Wyatt's career, he could really get the rub by beating Undertaker, but I agree, it's doubtful to have The Undertaker lose twice, but maybe after the big run he had with WrestleMania, maybe it's time to give back. But Bray Wyatt, he doesn't really need it. That's the other thing about Bray Wyatt is he went Jake Roberts as far as, like, Jake didn't need a title. And Bray almost doesn't need a title. Like, he has this following, and he's just so mesmerizing to watch. And he's not really he's a bad guy, but the crowd likes him. He's also kind of an in-betweener.
Yeah. And he's facing the ultimate guy who doesn't need a title in The Undertaker. The title of beating The Undertaker was a title that was on the line for 20 years, and Brock Lesnar broke through and won that title last year, and it was a huge deal. So he'd be sort of learning from the master in this case of how to carry yourself in a way that you don't need a championship, that you are the championship. But I don't have the balls to do it this year. I'm not picking Undertaker to lose two in a row.
Oh, come on.
Bray Wyatt, you know, he calls himself the Eater of Worlds, and he's the face of fear, but every big match he tends to lose. So, I mean, I'm really pulling for him. So I'm going to go all in. Even I was wrong last year, so I'm going to, even though I think the odds are definitely for an Undertaker redemption, but, I mean, seeing the pictures out on Google of him, okay, people snap pictures of him in public, it's hard to see. Undertaker's in rough shape, and it's like they dust him off every year, and he, you know, it's hard. But I think the nostalgia of wanting the Undertaker to win, but I would it's probably not going to happen. But I would love to see Bray Wyatt pull it off. Or, you know, I should now I'm a mark, but I'm just saying allowing him to pull it off.
Yeah, we're all a mark every now and then. That's okay. So. Jerry, your twin brother Rusev, had a big night beating on John Cena, putting himself in position to be strong and probably setting up a loss to Cena at WrestleMania, because Super Cena always comes back from these beatings, none the worse for wear. You know what you're gonna get when Sunday comes. He's gonna step on stage. He's gonna salute the soldiers as if he's one of the soldiers. And he's going to take out some towel with some saying on it about never quit or never say die or some other bullshit. And he's going to go to the ring and storm over Rusev and stand up for the United States. And then all will be right with the world.
Yeah. I also see it like it's returning the favor with the last pay-per-view. Rusev got a clean win. So it's almost time to pay it back to Cena. And it's, you know, I think, I don't know if they're attempting to make the Intercontinental title and the U.S. title make it more important again. But I'm not shocked to see a Cena win, even though, I mean, Rusev's been, it's been intriguing having him be undefeated and actually, you know, come across as legitimately tough. I mean, they're really making a big deal. I don't know if you read, they've hired all these extras to be Russian soldiers for WrestleMania. I mean, they're going to have a pretty big, elaborate entrance for Rusev this year.
Spoiler.
But I really think in the... Oh yeah, they're gonna have a big.
You mean
big
they won't
for
be real Russian soldiers? Oh,
we're gonna have 100 rednecks come out.
Yeah. You know, if I had the opportunity to watch, I'd probably been sitting there thinking, you know, oh, the shit's hitting the fan now. You know, Putin's trying to annex the stadium, just like he did with Crimea, and now I know that these guys are all actors. Come on.
Yeah.
Well, you know, these guys are all getting paid. They're all getting paid $1,100 for 3 days of the work. So that's
I'll go.
But
yeah,
but,
me
yeah,
too.
With the
I look Russian.
But I like that they. I love
Black
how
Russian.
I love how they played the blue stuff out. But I think they're going to do the Lana's going to turn on him, or I don't know. But we'll see. It'll be an interesting match. But I see maybe Cena getting his ass kicked, and then like the last 2 minutes, he gives him a. You know, gives an attitude adjustment. It's over. So I do see John Cena winning that one.
Yeah, unfortunately. It's ironic that AJ, CM Punk's wife, is tweeting about give divas a chance. She started a hashtag give divas a chance. She had this wonderful little response to Stephanie McMahon. Jason, if you remember the night of the Oscars. When Patricia Arquette won the Academy Award and gave a speech about women's equality for getting paid. And Stephanie McMahon responded to that on Twitter and about thanking her for fighting for women's rights and whatnot. And AJ replied to that tweet She replied back, "Your female wrestlers have record-selling merchandise and have starred in the highest-rated segment of the show several times, and yet they receive a fraction of the wages and screen time of the majority of the male roster." And there's kind of no comeback from that because it's all true. But it's ironic that AJ's tweeting and fighting WWE for more TV time and better esteem for the female roster. It's ironic because her husband, CM Punk, basically walked away because he didn't get the TV time and esteem that he thought he deserved. And he's never going to get that 45-minute classic with Daniel Bryan that I think he should have gotten. It would have headlined WrestleMania. It would have been two guys who are under 210 pounds headlining WrestleMania, and Vince McMahon's head would have exploded, and I think he would have dropped dead of a heart attack right there on the spot. But it wouldn't have been a hell of a match. But you can't do that because that exposes the rest of your roster is not nearly as talented. So that was never going to happen. But it's just crazy. Some of the politics and games that get played by these people backstage. And it all comes all the way back around to it's always about about a work. It's always about who's working who. No matter what's going on, no matter who seems to be the most talented, it's always about who's got the political advantage and who gets the upper hand backstage.
Well, and they've come a long ways. I mean, having their own show that's popular amongst non-wrestling fans, the Divas show, I mean, I'm happy for them. I was just shocked tonight, the Diva tag team match, I left the room to get popcorn, and when I came back and the match was still on, I was
stunning. It went more than 45 seconds. Unbelievable.
Yeah. Well, actually, it wasn't a tag team match. All four were there, but it was just Paige and one of the Bellas.
Which was really confusing to me watching it because I thought it was a tag team match. It was almost announced as one because they announced all four people as it was so-and-so and, you know, these two versus these two. And then I'm like, why is nobody tagging? And then I stopped caring. Fortunately, the way I watched Raw tonight was I started watching about an hour and a half into it so that I could just fast forward through the wrestling portions because there was just no, you know, I was trying to catch up on more of storyline. It didn't benefit me at all to watch any of the actual wrestling until I got completely caught up to the delay. And so about the last 45 minutes of the show, I ended up actually sitting through all of it. But, yeah, like stuff like that, I just had that on like a real slow fast forward. I'm like, yeah, okay, this happens. And then when the match was over, oh, okay, these two now they don't like each other or some weird thing's going to happen. But the actual in the ring back and forth had very little.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. I think we
dropped
him.
Did we lose you again?
Well, I mean, as far as you were talking about the Diva the chance, I think a lot of that reverted to like how the NXT stars are really getting a chance to shine. But also, if China couldn't break through that glass ceiling, I don't think anybody can. Because China was they're throwing her matches with Chris Jericho, and she was holding her own. And she couldn't, I mean, one of the reasons she left, she wanted to get a contract with what the guys are getting, and Vince wouldn't budge. And I felt, man, she had the skill. I mean, you know, it was sad to see. I mean, I know her career choice and everything's going to keep her probably out of the Hall of Fame and her relationship with Triple H in the past. But I think, you know, and I think Paige and AJ are probably the two most talented. Natty Neidhart, the three of them.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I'm just glad they at least had that show. I mean, there are other ways they're making income. It'd be great that they can make more money, but it's not like they have other places to go where they're, you know, they always said that now with the male wrestlers, they don't have a lot of options, but the women have always had less options.
Yeah, that's true. It's almost like they're lucky they're allowed to wrestle at all on the show because they could just forget the division altogether as little regard as they have for it.
Yeah.
All right, Jason's back on again. What's up with the Skype dropping tonight?
No, that's twice, and it's weird because I don't notice a drop, so I'm just talking, and then I end what I'm saying,
and you hear nothing.
I hear nothing, so I'm like, oh, Okay, either you guys are gone, and I'm the only, you know, that probably should never happen again, hopefully with the Skype, where I'm the only one on the show.
That or we just no-sold your response.
Yeah, so I have no idea at what point I got cut off. I'm just talking and trying to sound like I know what I'm saying, and
it was like right at the end of your statement, so we actually got everything you said.
Oh,
and
good.
Went on from there.
Yeah,
but like right when you were winding down, it just cut like your phone dropped. Except you're not on the phone, so that's weird.
Yeah, and it just all of a sudden I look at my computer here, and the Skype just says connecting. I'm like, oh, that's not good.
Yeah,
and this is not a normal thing. It has not happened to us.
Yeah, I know with the Skype, it's strange.
I've had trouble getting into the show, but I've never had trouble during the show.
And Jerry's on the phone just because he wanted to avoid any trouble with the Skype. He didn't even try to go through the Skype. So
sure.
Apparently that was he hasn't dropped at all tonight. So apparently that was a smart thing to do. So maybe we should all be on the phone instead of the Skype.
Well, as long as I get back, that's the thing. It's not a big deal to me if I drop out, as long as I can get back.
Right. So anything else stand out on Raw tonight for you?
For me? Oh God, yeah. No. I mean, none of the matches were overly compelling to me. I mean, you've got the Undertaker match, you've got Cena going up against the Russian guy who only knows how to yell his name. So I don't see him doing a lot of mic work because all he could do is go ah! Like, okay, I got the point. And,
well, he's very good at that one thing.
Yeah, and then I remember it, so I guess I guess there's something. And you have the Divas, and that's nothing. And but I'm probably missing something. Oh, and then you've got that one with the ladder, and that whole thing going down, and it's like
seven guys on the ladder fighting for a title that they have paid almost no attention to for the past year.
Yeah, the guy, I don't know what's his name, like Bad Leroy Brown, guy who has the belt, and he feels like he's getting jobbed, and okay, I got it.
Well, you got bad news. I mean, the big thing is he'll probably get injured, because that's what he's famous for now, unfortunately, is he gets these shoulder injuries and whatnot. So in ladder matches, I mean, if you recall the one last year with Luke Harper, there are a couple of situations he got into where he looked hurt. Just seeing the replay and then even rewinding it later and going back to it. I mean, those ladder matches can be scary stuff.
Yeah, usually it's Kofi Kingston bouncing around in those matches and doing something really crazy. He's not even in the match this year.
All you need are three guys at the top of the ladder and then somebody pushes the ladder over. You don't know what's going to happen. I mean, you can prepare yourself for the fall. I mean, I do give these guys a lot of credit. So, like that hit that Cena took when he got thrown over the announcer's table and landed on that chair. That couldn't have felt good.
Yeah, it looked kind of nasty, didn't it?
It did.
Well, did you see the ladder come down? Actually, the ladder came down and hit Luke Harper in the calf. And the way he rolled out of the ring and the ref checked on him, and he kind of hid him from view. So I was hoping he was okay from that. But Luke Harper has a bad record with ladders. But tonight, when the ladder fell over, his leg was there and it hit him in the calf, and that looked very painful.
No, I missed that, but yeah, as Jason pointed out, those ladders are no joke. You can you whatever training on how to fall that you did getting ready to be a pro wrestler, you didn't do too much training how to fall off an 18-foot high ladder. So good luck to all those guys fighting for the title that no one really cares about. So, but at least they get a payday out of it. I just wanted to talk about the whole Hulk Hogan Snoop thing, because all the shade that I throw at WWE sometimes and all the shit that I talk about them, that's kind of fucking cool. And no other wrestling league or organization or alliance or federation can pull anything like that off, because for all those years Hogan was in TNA, if they'd have brought in Snoop Dogg to try to pull something like that off, first of all, there wouldn't have been nearly as well written or executed, and second of all, one 20th of the audience that saw it tonight on Raw would have seen it on TNA because nobody cares about TNA. So those are those moments that only they can really pull off with the Hollywood stuff and Bill Simmons and all that. As much as I kind of hate it because it's not really about pro wrestling, at the same time, it's still sort of cool to watch. I have to admit, I watched the whole thing like with wide eyes, like, oh my God, I can't believe Snoop Dogg is in the ring posing with Hulk Hogan. And, you know, I was kind of marking out for that. But, you know, only WWE can pull that shit off.
Yeah, I think it's great that the company's always, you know, it's easier to pull off too whenever they're in LA to get something like that. And, you know, I think they've been advertising for a couple of weeks to make his appearance on Raw. So, hey, and a Snoop Dogg fan that might not be a wrestling fan will probably tune in and check out the show.
Yeah, for a few seconds at least anyway. Anything else stand out for Raw tonight for you, Jerry, or anything leading up to this coming WrestleMania on Sunday?
You know, I guess not. You know, the Sheamus's name has been out there. I was really trying to pick out the moment of when he's going to show up. Is he going to be an extra person for the Intercontinental title match? I actually think he'll probably win the Andre the Giant Battle Royal, and he'll probably show up and be a surprise entrance in that. Of course, they didn't show that, but I also think, part of me thinks Damian Mizdow, I mean, they've been kind of teasing him to turn on The Miz quite a bit, and I'm wondering if maybe Mizdow will throw out Miz during the Rumble, so maybe Mizdow, so if Sheamus doesn't show up for that match, Damian Sandow will throw Miz out and maybe, and, you know, start a feud, you know, after WrestleMania. So I guess if Sheamus shows up, he'll win. Otherwise, I actually think Damian Sandow may actually do something where surprise, you know, picks off The Miz, throws him out, and maybe Sandow wins the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like a couple of good predictions. You got the they're on the WWE website. They're calling it the Vigilante versus the King, which of course Triple H is the King. He's Vince McMahon's son-in-law. He's going to run WWE one day. Of course he would call himself the King. How pretentious is that? You got Sting coming back and defending the honor of WCW 15 years after WWE defeated WCW. They're going to resurrect that whole thing. And the guy that he has to face to defend the honor is not Stone Cold, not The Rock, not the actual biggest stars of the era, but Triple H, the one guy that's still left around. I mean, I'm not really interested in that whole thing personally.
Yeah, I agree. I think Sting, you know, I think a lot of people wanted to see Sting and Undertaker, but those guys, you know, Triple H, love him or hate him, he could carry the match for Sting, because Sting's big thing is his age and everything. You know, he's got to be a little bit protected during the match, and you just can't put him in with anybody. And Undertaker is, I am not knocking the Undertaker at all, talented. But he's lost a step or two, and you put two guys in their 50s with injuries in the ring together. I don't think that match would have probably worked out. So I think Triple H was their best option at the time. But I totally agree with you that it's not the big pull for me.
Yeah, and Randy Orton, Seth Rollins should be. Rollins, another stepping stone as he builds his name and his credibility up to what should be a pretty nice long career with WWE. They're probably doing a much better job building him than they have Roman Reigns so far.
Seth is making a great heel. Even the build-up with Randy Orton, I remember when before Randy Orton, I don't know if he got injured or they kind of pulled him off TV for a while, but he there was that match, there was that time when they're all in the ring with the Authority, and Randy Orton comes out and he's all kicked off, and Triple H trying to calm him down, and then just the reaction he did where he quickly snapped and gave an RKO to Seth Rollins. I mean, I actually got chilled because it reminded me of Stone Cold, where everybody's like, is it coming? Is it coming? Is it coming? And when he stunned somebody, you know, it was like that moment. And and then Randy Orton disappeared for a while. I think I'm trying to remember if he must have gotten some legitimate injury, and I felt it cooled it off a little bit. It would have been awesome if they could, if that wouldn't have happened, to see how they could have built it even better. But yeah, Seth Rollins is a hell of a talent, and to see the things he did with the Shield, and I think Randy Orton and Seth Rollins could have the potential to be the match of the night. They have the opportunity to steal the show.
More on the other side after this music. All right. Now into our after show portion of the program, a little bit of overtime going into the WWE hype for WrestleMania 31 coming up on Sunday evening. You're going to do you have WWE Network already, right, Jerry?
I do. I'm having a little bit of a problem with part of it, but I am getting it tonight. You know, I feel like the $10 a month, I feel like I'm robbing them. I mean, I watch old pay-per-views. I like to watch the old Wrestling Roundtable show that was on the 24/7 network they had. I mean, I bet you I'm watching a show, at least even just one episode or a show, almost every day.
You know, I would be right there with you. I love the old stuff as much as anybody, but that free trial that I got when they first rolled this out last year was just so frustrating, because I tried it on like three different platforms and it didn't work right on any of the. There was something wrong on all three, something different on the desktop computer and on the Roku and something else, and I think my phone at the time wasn't. It just everything I tried, it wasn't working right. I just said the hell with it, and sort of obstinately, I have not tried to sign up with them again. I probably will one of these days, but you know, perfect example of Jason, the common or the casual fan, not being really inspired by this build up to this year's WrestleMania. I think if this WrestleMania was more special to me, I probably would sign up for the network and watch WrestleMania for $9.99, as they kept reminding everybody and making you feel stupid for still ordering the $65 pay-per-view, which is an interesting business practice. But this build is so underwhelming. I don't really want to see Roman Reigns go over a guy that is clearly in every form a better performer than he is in Brock Lesnar. I don't really care to pay to see that, even if it is $10.
Well, I guess sad commentary on things. I remember listening to Jim Ross. Kind of one thing is, I think the only true heel in WWE right now is The Miz. And, I mean, like, when you think of a heel, you're thinking of a coward or something that has to cheat to win. And Brock Lesnar is the opposite. I mean, he's this monster. And I don't know where they're expecting the crowd to boo him. I mean, he's just this monster. And then with Roman Reigns and the way they're presenting him, he's supposed to be the babyface, but, I mean, it's that force-fed thing. So I don't know. I'm not saying Brock Lesnar's they got the body type where to make him, you know, coward would probably look ridiculous. But it is something that, you know, you're looking at. I'm looking at all the matches right now, and it is, there are some matches that raise my eyebrow, but it's, you know, the hardcore fan, I'm going to get the pay-per-view regardless. But what makes it a successful WrestleMania is if somebody like Jason gets the pay-per-view, if you know what
right.
I mean.
Right, right. Yeah, the Daniel Bryan probably is going to go over and win the Intercontinental title in that ladder match that we talked about earlier. But, you know, to that same point, wouldn't you much rather have seen him in the main event? Wouldn't that be a much more compelling thing to see Daniel Bryan gone Brock Lesnar? The whole Intercontinental title pursuit is so strange because, like I said, they haven't paid any attention to that thing for the last year, and now all of a sudden everyone's running out and trying to steal the belt and you know, running around trying to stuff it in their shirt and sneak under the ring and all this stuff. And you know, why is it important now? Why does everybody want? Why hasn't anyone tried to steal the belt in the last 15 or 20 years or something like that? Why now? It just didn't make any sense. They're going to put Bryan at the top of that ladder so they can have the whole stadium do the yes thing, and it's going to be this big mid-card achievement. They've defined him down so hard in this past year. It just makes you shake your head. I don't like the direction that whole thing is going. But is that strike you as strange that he's now just so gung-ho and forward-thinking about the Intercontinental title after, you know, only 1 year after headlining WrestleMania for the big strap, and now he's just so focused on the IC title. It just seems weird.
They got to do something, because when the last 6 months your heavyweight champion appeared in two pay-per-views, it might have been three,
right.
But he's only been in two or three pay-per-views, that, you know, this push for these titles should have been bigger 6 months ago, and not, it feels like it's gone a lot bigger now. And, you know, you see the Intercontinental title match, you've got your solid mid-carders in there, and then your Battle Royal is your lower card guys, and I think it's just an opportunity for everybody to get a payday. So I guess the ladder match could easily steal the show, but I'd rather see Daniel Bryan shine in a one-on-one match, like kind of what you're kind of hinting at. I'd rather see him. I wish they would have built him with somebody else. I mean, I think Dolph Ziggler and Daniel Bryan with a proper story could have stole the show.
Yep, I completely agree with that. Similar to Daniel Bryan and CM Punk with a perfect story, where CM Punk is jealous over Daniel Bryan's Yes Chance taking over in popularity, and Punk bashes him in the head with something and sets up a beautiful feud over the title. That would have also worked out perfectly, in my opinion, but it seems like WWE doesn't want to put Daniel Bryan in that big of a spotlight where the focus is on the in-ring work, because, again, I think that takes so much focus off of the other guy, the bigger guys that don't work as well as Daniel Bryan. You see Bryan and Ziggler in the ring for too long, and you start looking at Roman Reigns and going, what? This guy? No, he's no good.
Exactly. And I'll take it a step further. Not only would CM Punk and Daniel Bryan put on one of the great, probably a wrestling, it'd be a main event, but it'd be a match that would be as memorable as Macho Man and Ricky Steamboat, and that was a mid-card match, for God's sake, for the Intercontinental title, I might add. But if you got these two in the main event, and on top, I would have went so far as to make it an Iron Man match. That would have been beautiful.
Absolutely. I don't remember the buy rate for the Shawn Brett Iron Man match, but they haven't gone back to that too much. I'm not completely sure why. It may not have gotten over with most of the crowd. I'm not sure. But, yeah, you're right. That would have been just a wrestling fan's dream to see those two displaying all of their skills that they bumped around in the indies for 10 years before they got here. And they learned so much. And it seems like they don't get the chance to show all that they've learned in when they get to the WWE ring. And that would have been a perfect opportunity to display everything that they went through.
Yeah, there was a couple of moments there when I believe Daniel Bryan was the world champion and CM Punk was the WWE champion. They had a couple of matches against each other, and they were shorter matches, maybe 10 minutes,
right.
12 minutes tops. And there were some seeds of just some beautiful things there. Boy, to see them go 30 minutes would just, yeah.
I mean, Punk took Cena 40 minutes in that Money in the Bank match that put CM Punk on the map, so him and Daniel Bryan would have really blew the roof off the place.
And the Monday night, I remember the Monday Night Raw, the year he lost to Undertaker at WrestleMania, that CM Punk and John Cena went at it on a Monday Night Raw where Cena finally beat CM Punk. I would have paid $30 to see that. And
yeah.
They gave it away for free, and that was a... You know, that was another match that went multi. I think there were at least two commercials during that match, which is, you know, I mean, they had to interrupt that match twice, maybe a third time. It was a longer match for Raw.
Right. Yeah, I remember it. It was pretty damn good. The Hall of Fame entrance this year, of course, Macho Man Randy Savage leading the way, and he. Strong memories of Macho. There's so many to choose from. You just talked about that great match with Steamboat at WrestleMania 3, one of my favorite matches of all time as well. But any other memories of the great Macho Man?
I when I had my basement league when I was 9, 10 years old, I posted a picture recently of me wearing blankets, dressed up as the Macho Man. I always loved the Macho Man. The guy that worked with my dad that was a retired pro wrestler, that Sailor Art Thomas, he kind of took us, we met him at an event where he kind of showed us how to go around back, and I had an opportunity to When I say meet Macho Man, it wasn't like a one-on-one thing. It was more of a passing, but it was time stood still there for me as a child. And, you know, I didn't get the concept of things back then. And there, back then, I don't know if you ever went to a Superstars of Wrestling taping when you were a kid, but they would film a month's worth of shows. And it would be a whole bunch of squash matches, basically. But the main event was Hulk Hogan and Macho Man. That was 2 years before WrestleMania 5. So, you know, I got the treat to see that. And, you know, it was beautiful. And, but yeah, I mean, just to see him go, WCW, you know, just, I think the nostalgia of liking Macho Man, but boy, you know, I was probably one of those kids when, you know, the Macho Man and the Mega Powers and everything, they exploded. I mean, I was totally in Macho Man's corner all the time. He was, you know, just amazing, amazing talent.
Yeah. Impossible to take your eyes off of when he was on the screen. He just commanded you to look at him. Because it was like, who is this crazy person? You couldn't take your eyes off him. He did this one interview with Gene Okerlund, which is like famous on the internet because apparently he was a little under the influence of something. The rumor has it, I should say, allegedly. And he's it's hard to tell because most of his promos sounded like he was on something, but he was actually lucid. He just, you know, that was just his style. But this particular one, he was even more out in space than normal. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, at some point in the middle of the promo, he turns to Okerlund and stares at him for a second and goes, "Your mustache is crooked."
Now I've got to look that up.
The best part is actually Okerlund's immediate comeback, because Okerlund is such a pro, he doesn't miss a beat. He just looks at him and goes, "Well, your beard's a little sideways, but that's beside the point." And it's just like, okay, I don't know what he was on, but if you can imagine Macho as he normally was and then imagine him on something allegedly, that's as crazy as it gets. But, yeah, when I think of him and some of the craziest promos that he's ever done and the craziest things he's ever done in the ring, that's definitely one of them. And then I have when I was taping episodes of Superstars and Wrestling Challenge in syndication, my big heyday of doing that was around 92-93 when they put Macho Man on color commentary, and they debuted one of the Brian guys, Brian Clark. I tend to get them mixed up, Brian Adams and Brian Clark. They debuted Brian Clark, who I don't even know which character you would say he's best known as in wrestling. He was Night Stalker. He was Wrath in WCW. They debuted him as this character called Adam Bomb, and he was supposed to be from Three Mile Island and had, like, crazy-looking contacts where it looked like his eyeballs had exploded. And, you know, obviously Vince McMahon's...
He wore goggles to the ring.
Mm-hmm. Obviously Vince McMahon's vision was that he was some nuclear creation, you know, something that's not of this humanity. And Macho did his best to put him over. He pretty much just kept saying "awesome" during every move that he did. But the big moment was at the end when they replayed the way that he won the match with a powerbomb, and then they replayed him looking into the camera with these crazy contacts making his eyes look blowed up. And Macho's commentary to put him over was something along the lines of, "They say you can tell what a man's thinking by looking into his eyes. Well, tell me, what is that man right there thinking right now?" It gave me nightmares, man. When you get a crazy character and you get a crazy man in commentary putting over a crazy character, that's sort of the magic that wrestling can give you sometimes, is when you get that mix there. Because honestly, most of the time Macho did commentary, he sounded bored. And years later, you know, reading old dirt sheets, you realize why. It's because he thought he could still wrestle and wanted to get back in the ring, but Vince McMahon wouldn't let him, so that's why he took off to WCW, because he still wanted to be active. But there's that rare moment right there when you got a little bit of the madness on the microphone, and it was pretty sweet. But yeah, lots of memories of Macho, especially in the ring.
Oh yeah, I mean, his catchphrases there. His catchphrases were a little different. There weren't, I mean, it was something that he would say, like, you know, "Freak out!" And I mean, he just go on. I mean, he And his voice, I always thought he had a, I mean, I was watching an interview when he was retired, and that's his voice. And it's,
yeah, that's him.
It's interesting. And, yeah, I mean, and I think, I'm assuming his brother is going to accept the Hall of Fame honor in his behalf, Lanny Poffo.
You know, I just heard a podcast where Lanny was interviewed by Wade Keller, Pro Wrestling Torch, and it doesn't sound like that's a done deal. It sounds like it's a little funky, the relationship between WWE and the Poffo family. From Lanny's mouth, from what I understood, this wasn't supposed to happen this way. Macho was dead set on going in by himself. When he saw the Von Erichs go in as a family, he promised his ailing father, who was dying at the time, Angelo Poffo, we're going to all go in as a family together. And it seemed like that sort of kept him going. It kept Angelo going for a while until he wound up passing away. So Randy was set on this being the way that they go in, was the Poffo family, just like the Von Erichs. And finally, it broke down where Vince, I suppose, Vincent, whoever's in charge of doing this in WWE, was able to contact the mother, Lanny and Randy's mother, Angelo's wife, and ask for Randy to be inducted by himself. And she relented. Again, this is Lanny saying this in the interview. She relented because she finally thought that they had paid her proper respect by apologizing or saying their condolences for her losses once they contacted her. Because apparently they never did that all these years. They didn't actually contact her and specifically say our condolences on your loss. And she sort of held that as a bit of a grudge all these years. But once they did that and then asked for Randy to be inducted as a single, she relented and decided to allow that to happen, even though that technically wasn't Randy's wish. So it sounds like Lanny might be there to accept the induction and might be there to give a speech, but he might not. I think he's still a little sore about the whole thing. He actually sounded wounded, like a, you know, he lost his father and he lost his brother, and he's the last man standing in the family, sort of taking care of his older mother now, living with her. And it was a little heartbreaking to hear that interview, but I encourage everyone to go out and find that because it was a free podcast. But, yeah, I'm not so sure he's going to be there, actually, listening to the way he was speaking.
Hmm. And there are a lot of fans that will say, well, it's not the Hall of Fame without Macho Man, or why isn't Owen Hart in there yet? A lot of fans don't understand that it's not that simple. I believe it's Owen's widow will probably never allow Owen to be in the Hall of Fame. That's the same thing that kind of held up Macho Man with his family. And that there, you know, you can't just drop them in the Hall of Fame. And the longest holdout was the living legend
Bruno
Sammartino, and I think it was Triple H who reached out, and you know the company kind of went PG and kind of healed a lot of the old wounds and fixed that. But yeah, a lot of people don't understand what goes into, like, you just don't name names and okay, they're in. And the Hall of Fame to me is weird when you get like Coco Beware then, and
yeah,
the Honky Tonk, and then on top of that they have the Honky Tonk Man induct him. But the Honky Tonk Man, who you love him or hate him, like, it was a good heel. I felt he had a really good run as Intercontinental Champion. He held the title the longest to this day. I just can't believe he's not in, but yet he'll now have him induct Coco Beware. Can you name anything? Even though he was entertaining to watch, he was entertaining as hell to watch. He really didn't like achieve any prominence. He was almost a mid-card jobber.
Yeah. That's why I don't really take it all that seriously, because it's so obvious that they're trying to cover every demo with every induction ceremony. They're trying to get a black guy in every induction. They're trying to get a woman in every induction. This year the woman is Medusa Bocelli, who I would leave my wife today to go with Medusa. Don't tell my wife that. But clearly, you know, they got Rikishi this year as the one colored guy. I don't know who they're going to come up with next year, but it's all about publicity and PR, and you know, any Hall of Fame with Drew Carey and Pete Rose and Arnold Schwarzenegger, you can't take it too seriously. So, you know, of course Macho should have been in before all of these other people. Just think of any wrestling Hall of Fame that would induct Coco Beware before Randy Savage. I mean, come on. So,
even Kevin Nash, he's in this year. I go, wasn't Kevin Nash in last year? Oh, no, that was Diesel. I'm like, Diesel is Kevin Nash. What are they going to do next year, bring in the great Oz? Is Oz or Vinny Vegas going to get in next year? I mean, I don't mind if the NWO got in and then Kevin Nash went in, but, like, if we're going to, like, start giving the gimmicks out, it's just, like, that's awkward. But, you know, after seeing the Ultimate Warrior get in, now, I don't know if you ever watched the self-destruction of the Ultimate Warrior, the DVD that WWE put out.
No, I couldn't bring myself to watch that.
it was Slaughterville. I mean, they slaughtered this guy. And then to all of a sudden, he's in the Hall of Fame. And watching his induction, it was like everybody was on the edge of their damn seat, because I'm like, what is he going to say next? Mm-hmm. I mean, because, you know, in the end, I mean, there was some really bad blood there. And if they can get Bruno Sammartino and Nelson Warrior in the Hall of Fame, I'm pretty sure they can get anybody in. I will not be shocked if they can get Benoit in after those two guys, if those two guys get in.
Would be unbelievable.
I don't think Benoit would want to be in, because that's a stretch. But it's just amazing. These are guys that have such a bad history that they agreed to get in. I'm just blown away.
Yeah. Well, like I said, it's something that clearly they're just trying to cover their bases and make sure everybody is represented. And you know, I can't take it too seriously myself, but I'm going to be glad to see Macho in. I might even check out that induction ceremony, just because I don't know what's going to happen. Like I said, Lanny might be there. Lanny is as much of a candidate to say something off the wall as Ultimate Warrior was last year, because there's still, like I said, it sounds like there's still bad blood there as well. So it's going to be interesting one way or another.
Yeah, I've been watching the last couple of years, so.
Yeah. I've taken 90 minutes of your time. You've been very, very gracious with your time. I really appreciate you giving your expert opinion once again leading up to this year's WrestleMania. And thank you once again. And we'll definitely have to do this again next year.
Thank you for your time. I really enjoyed doing this.
All right, Jerry. See you.
See you later.
All right, Jerry, the wrestling expert, checking in and previewing this upcoming WrestleMania, looking at this recent Monday Night Raw tonight, and checking out what's been happening on WWE programming. Again, just a bit of a strange build-up this year. It almost seems like a B version of WrestleMania. Does not seem like it's going to be their greatest wrestling card ever, their greatest WrestleMania ever, nowhere near that, just based on the lineup. How strange is it to have a Divas, I should have asked Jerry this, how strange is it to have a Divas title match as the lead-in and build-up to a non-title tag team attraction on Sunday? I mean, does that make sense to anybody? No? Okay. Maybe it's just me. Jason dropped off. He tried to keep coming back in on Skype four or five more times before the live portion ended. And I don't believe you can call in to the show on Skype after the live portion ends. Or actually, I don't think you can call in even on the phone after the live portion. I think all call-ins are locked out once the show is no longer live, except for whoever's actually on the line still at that point. So that's why Jerry was still there with me, and Jason was gone and not to return, because by the time we went off live, he was gone, and that therefore he's locked out. So that was the end of that. So that's why you didn't hear Jason the last 40 minutes or last 50 minutes. No, it was 11:30. So the last 23 minutes, I got confused there. So as the hours wind down and I get more and more confused because it's getting later and later, I'm going to stop yapping and end the show. Our next show is going to be, let's see, I guess it's going to be our baseball preview show, because the season's going to start Sunday, April the 5th. with the Cardinals and the Cubs from Wrigley Field. We already discussed that we're going to do Saturday night, April the 4th, as our baseball preview show. So that would be next Saturday, if I look at the calendar correctly. So in a little less than 2 weeks from now, Jay and I will be back on the air. Had something else I wanted to get to as well. I'm trying to remember. I'm drawing a blank at the moment. I'm sure I'll remember as soon as I stop the show. I do remember. I wanted to update our bracket pool, our bracket wagers real quick while I have a chance here. What a crazy, crazy first round or second round or third round or however the NCAA wants to refer to it. They can make up whatever names they want, but the first weekend of the big dance of the college basketball tournament, many, many, many upsets abound. It featured my finalist, one of my two finalists, getting eliminated within the first 4 hours of the tournament starting on Thursday morning or Thursday afternoon. Iowa State was my titleist competitor against Kentucky, and they got knocked out in the very first round. It's the earliest I can remember one of my finalists getting eliminated. Like, not just the first round, but one of the first games played in the whole damn tournament. Jason then followed that up with his actual championship pick, Virginia, not making it past the second round. So I don't know which one of those you think is worse, but at least my championship pick is still alive in Kentucky. Jason laughed at me getting Iowa State knocked out. And then when I texted him that his national titleist was gone, he responded back, "I would give a shit if I watched basketball more than 3 weeks in a year." So he was a little salty about me teasing him back, but that's okay. So three of this is just, our brackets are just in shambles. I mean, it's one thing to have some upsets, knock off some guys, but our brackets are absolutely destroyed. Three of Jason's final four competitors are done. Baylor, SMU, which was, of course, a big upset to have a six-seed SMU go all the way through to the final four. But Baylor, a three-seed out of the West, SMU, SMU, the six-seed out of the South, Virginia, the two-seed out of the East, which was also my pick out of the East, was Virginia. We both were correct in saying that the number one seed in the East, Villanova, would get stomped down before the Final Four came about, because Villanova always finds a way to bow out early. And they bowed out a lot earlier than we thought they would. But we both had Virginia coming out of that region, and we were both dead wrong on that. We underestimated the great Michigan State. You know, I should have known. I teased Jason about it when I saw that matchup of 2 versus 7 in the second round, potentially, of Virginia against the great Tom Izzo and Michigan State, and all they do is win, and this is their time of year. And I made fun of it, and what happened? That's exactly what they did. They came up big in this time of the year because that's what they do. And I didn't listen to my own damn advice, and I'm very upset about that. But the bottom line is, of course, who's actually leading in the actual pool, and I am leading. I'm up 43 points to 37, according to the Yahoo bracket scoring system. In raw picks, I have 32 right through the first weekend, and Jason has 28. And I have a lot more possible points to be scored because, again, my actual championship team is still alive, unlike Jason. Jason has three Final Four teams dead, and he still has Kentucky, but I also have Kentucky in the Final Four, and I have another Final Four team still alive in Arizona. But I had Virginia and Iowa State on the other side of the bracket, and they're both already DOA. But as shot as my bracket looks, as completely blowed to smithereens as my bracket looks, I'm looking at all this red on my bracket, it's still not as bad as Jason's, and that's all that matters. I am ahead of Jason, and I am looking good in my pursuit of the bracket championship, the four-way victory for the year, the four majors that we compete for, the two fantasy leagues, the, of course, the Picks Championship, the whole point of this podcast, the NFL picks, and now the Bracket Challenge. I can sweep those four. I can take these four. The other three would count for last year because it would be last season for the NFL, the season that just ended. And then if you don't want to count this as part of that little grouping, that I would not have the whole year of the Grand Slam. I would just have my own personal slam of the three from last year and the one from this year if you count the college basketball as this year. But I'm going to count it as a Grand Slam because this bracket is for the college basketball season that began last year. So therefore, just like the Super Bowl happened this year for the NFL season that occurred last year, and I won the picks pool for that Super Bowl, I'm going to count this as all part of this current package with the two fantasy leagues and the football picks. So this is for the Grand Slam period as far as I'm concerned. Not a Dre Slam, as Jason tried to say, but for the Grand Slam overall, I'm going for the big deal, the Grand Slam, and I'm going for this particular victory in the college basketball picks. I'm going for the right to decide which draft coverage, which NFL draft coverage Jason has to watch. That's the winner of the college basketball bracket gets to choose which draft coverage that he watches, and he has to decide which draft coverage that the loser has to watch. And like we said, we think the NFL Network and ESPN are the only two television networks that do draft coverages. And so therefore, those are the only two choices. And every single time, 100 out of 100 times, I would choose to watch the NFL Network coverage of the NFL draft because the ESPN coverage still features Chris Berman. And until that changes, I'm not interested because Chris Berman is terrible at his job. And yes, I understand this is me saying this, me just stuttering and slobbering and clearly not as good at talk show hosting as I thought I was when I started this whole podcast thing with Jason last year. But I think I'm getting better. Maybe I'm not. I don't get any feedback, so I wouldn't know. But yeah, I'm not doing ESPN draft coverage if I can do anything at all to not have to watch that again. That's what I'm trying to do by winning this college basketball tournament. Okay, how do you want to contact me and let me know how bad I'm doing? You can contact this show in several ways. You can tweet me personally at IMLDDre, like Dr. Dre. You can tweet Jason at IMLDJTG, J as in Jaguar, T as in Toy, G as in Gorilla. And you can email the show as well. We both have access to the email, but I'm pretty sure I'm the only one that ever checks it. But obviously, any correspondence, I would let Jason know that that we have it. He knows the password on the email. So if he ever wanted to log into Gmail and check that particular account, he could do so. But you would send any correspondence via email to this email address, in much less detail, at gmail.com. Very simple. We have a blog. It's in much less detail.blogspot.com. That's where our football picks usually go up. We've had a couple of items that we've put up since the football season ended that we talked about on the last show. That the most recent thing up there is Jason discovering this commercial for golfknickers.com, which is a website devoted to selling golf knickers and other apparel where you can get out on the golf course and look your swankiest. The commercial, however, doesn't sound like they're saying golf knickers. It sounds like they're saying something racially insensitive. And I listened to the links that Jason put up there, and oh my God, that's exactly what they sound like. That's exactly how Jason described it, is that the first couple of times. There's two different versions of that commercial up there. There's one with this guy trying to do some Irish accent, and maybe he actually is Irish, or maybe not. But and then there's another version with an American accent. And both guys start out really trying hard to say golf knickers, and by the end of the commercial, they're getting lazy and they're letting their tongue kind of drag, and it doesn't come out sounding like golf knickers anymore by the time they get to the end of those commercials. Both of them sound like they're saying something very, very racially insensitive. So Jason put that link up, and it's pretty funny. Want a little chuckle? You can go and check that out. Our live show page, if you're listening to this on iTunes, if you found us on iTunes by searching In Much Less Detail the podcast, you can subscribe to this show on iTunes. It'll download right into your iPhone or iPod as soon as it's over. If you're listening that way and you're wondering where you listen to us live, well, if you go to the website blogtalkradio.com/inmuchlessdetail, that's where the show airs live on the internet. And you can sign up on that website, and when I schedule a new show, it'll give you some sort of notification. So it's not just checking in like every day to that website to see, do they have a show scheduled tonight? Do they have a show scheduled tonight? There's a way to get notified. I guess it'll email you or something when I do schedule a new show. And like I said, the next show coming up is going to be, I'm going to schedule that probably as soon as I stop this show tonight here, but it's scheduled for Saturday, April 4th, when we do our big baseball preview show. So that is going to do it. I'm going to finally stop flapping my gums here and make this thing official for Jay, who is probably very happy to have checked out of a wrestling podcast and conversation before it hit midnight. And for Jerry, once again, doing a great job of discussing the issues of the industry that we both love. I am Dre, signing off well past midnight here Central Time. I have to remember that maybe I'll write this down. I want to tell the story of why I don't have a cell phone at this moment, because it's sort of crazy and funny. It's not the most interesting story, but it's definitely a story I want to tell with someone else on the line, which would be my co-host Jason. It would be kind of depressing to tell it by myself, so I want to wait till I have someone on the line. It'll be an old story in a couple of weeks when we have our next show, because by then hopefully I'll have a new phone. So it's kind of fresh right now because it happened this weekend, but again, I don't want to do it by myself because it'll be a little depressing. So hopefully I'll remember for our after show, after the baseball show, to have that story. Jason will probably remind me when we get to the after show, after the baseball podcast. He'll probably say, hey, Dre, why don't you tell us about what happened with your phone a couple of weeks ago? And I'll go, oh, yeah, I remember that story. And then I'll relay that story when I have a co-host, because it's as uninteresting as it may be, it's a lot more interesting when I have someone there to actually bounce it off of. So signing off. Thank you all for listening to me babble on, and we will see you on our next show once again Saturday, April the 4th. Good night.